The kirtan of these hippies was different from the chanting of Indian Brahmanas, but Prabhupada didn't mind. His standard was devotion. In his Radha Krishna temple, whatever he accepted, Krishna accepted. This was his offering to Krishna through his spiritual master, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati. Prabhupada was absolutely confident. Even if his young devotees didn't know how to play the harmonium keyboard or the mridanga, even if they didn't know that congregational kirtan should be done not in constant unison as they were doing, but responsively, and even if they didn't know how to honor the guru, still because they were chanting and dancing, he encouraged them and nodded to them, yes. We see it from Prabhupada's example and from the philosophies given by Rupa Goswami and Krishna in the Bhagavatam Gita. Then it's the devotional aspect that's the most important. Right? It doesn't mean that proper ways of doing things isn't important, but it's a matter of that whatever is being done, it's to be done to express the devotion. Right? Does that make sense? Just like if you're cooking. Let us say it's not very sophisticated cooking. Right? Then what are the important elements? Yeah, it should taste proper, right? It means if it's cooked properly, it should taste nicely. Even if it's just simple, something simple. You boil some potatoes, put salt, pepper, some butter on it, right? Right? You put it in the right proportion, it will be nice. Even though it's very, very simple. Right? Now let's say you're cooking some very complicated dalna or kali or things like that. So there's going to be so many technical aspects within the cooking process is there, so many different kinds of spices and different ingredients are used. But what is the most important element once it's cooked?
Taste.
Yeah, it tastes proper. Does that make sense? So whether it's simple, or whether it's very complex, still, if it doesn't taste proper, what's the meaning of the cooking? Right? So in the same way is that whatever one does in devotional service, the important thing is the devotion. So if it's very simple, someone doesn't know, but the devotion must be the prominent element. Everyone over there seems to be enjoying the smoke. So here is that they're beginning, they don't know, right? They don't know. So Srila Prabhupada, the first point is that they're absorbed in chanting. Right? That's the first thing. If they're absorbed in chanting and they're, that aspect of trying to follow Prabhupada's directions, then everything's perfect. Then with time, as they become purified, as they become more practiced, then you can introduce more and more aspects of devotional service. Yes? Does that make sense? Like that. So slowly, slowly it can all be done. But it's not at the expense of the devotion. It's not that, oh yes, we have a very sophisticated, developed program, but there's no devotion. Right? But that doesn't mean there is no program. Oh, it's only the devotion, so we don't care for anything else. No, the two go together, the devotion and the rules. They go together. You express your devotion through those rules. Right? Does that make sense? Yeah? So, Srila Prabhupada understanding this, this is what they can do. They're all chanting Hare Krishna together. There's no such thing as responsive here. They don't understand that. Prabhupada's singing in that way. He'll sing, then stop, then sing, then stop. But they'll always sing. Right? And some will dance nicely, and that others are just completely crazy. Like that, Does that make sense? So the main thing is it starts with that, and then as they surrender, as that commitment to Krishna consciousness is there, then all these different things start expanding. Yes? No? No? We get a little this way, we might cook the plant. I remember when we were out camping and then the smoke would always go into your face. You know, because it doesn't matter. Wherever you'd stand around the fire, the smoke would always go your direction. You know, so you know, because you're the new one, so you don't quite know where to stand. So then the more senior people, they would always say, smoke follows beauty. That way then you wouldn't feel bad because the smoke was always in your face. Wild elements were there, of course. People whose minds and intentions were far away in some chemically induced fantasy. Yet the mood was dominated by Srila Prabhupada's followers, who danced with arms upraised and watched their leader carefully. Although in many ways they were still like hippies, they were Swamiji's disciples, and they wanted to please him and follow his instructions. They wanted to obtain Krishna consciousness. For all the varied punctuation of horns and timpani, the kirtan remained sweet. Hayagriva even played his cornet in tune, and only during every other mantra. Notice it mentions in tune. That said even in tune. That means there might have been a time where he wasn't playing in tune. You know, whatever. Right, so you notice here also they're careful. They're doing the kirtan, that, but they're careful to watch Prabhupada. What is his mood? Is he happy? You know, how he wants it to go, more fast, more slow, this, that. So that aspect then is very good. Yes? No? Maybe? Srila Prabhupada knew that some aspects of the kirtan were wrong or below standard, but he accepted the offering, and not awkwardly, but lovingly. He simply wanted these American boys and girls to chant. That they dressed irregularly, jumped too savagely, or had the wrong philosophy did not concern him. These boys and girls were chanting Hare Krishna, so at least for the present, they were pure. The hippies knew that. The hippies knew that too, and they loved it. So not awkwardly, I mean it wasn't, means in other words, someone knows the standard and they're not following the standard, then it may create an awkward environment, right? But here they don't know the standard. They don't know any different. So Prabhupada wouldn't be awkward about it. You know, very affectionately in that he would accept whatever they do. That would inspire them because then they want to please him. Then naturally with time, then more detail will come into their life. Strobe light. Okay. Just as in Janaki's dream, Srila Prabhupada's pleasure was to see the whole world engaged in kirtan. Somehow or another, he would say, people should be engaged in Krishna consciousness. And this was the instruction of Lord Chaitanya's chief follower, Rupa Goswami, who had written, Tasmat kenapya upadyena mana krishne nive shayet. Somehow or other, fix the mind on Krishna. The rules and regulations can come later. Right? So you're trying to get attracted to Krishna, focus the mind on Krishna. If that's there, then one can fill in everything else. Right? Everything else can be filled in. Does that make sense? That's the position. It doesn't mean it's not filled in. It just says, somehow or another, fix the mind on Krishna. The rules and regulations can come later. It doesn't mean they don't come. Because Rupa Goswami also then in the, I think it's the fifth chapter, then he's talking about the importance of following the rules and regulations because they keep you properly situated so you don't become deviated from Krishna consciousness, right? Because otherwise the rules are there, you have a process you follow, a schedule you follow, and then your life becomes regulated. But if you don't, then it can be distracted by anything. So following the rules is then important. Somebody's doing something with the switch, or?
Yeah, some problem with that. Some problem with the wiring.
Wiring?
Yeah.
Means you know that?
Yeah, but you should turn that
off. Oh, okay. Because the pump's running. Oh, then his fan's running. not the problem. Does that make sense? In other words, you start Krishna consciousness, then later on you can introduce all the different things. Does that make sense? Like that. That's the whole point. A little kid, you know, is there. You get him chanting, get him involved. You know, they like going to the temple, seeing the deities, like being with devotees, like chanting. That's there, whether they're doing things nicely or not. But they start there, and then from there, because you like it, you'll expand, right? You like the cooking, so then when you like the taste, so therefore then you'll continue cooking. Then with continuing cooking, with practice, you'll get better at it. And the more you become better, the more detail you can show, you can add. Is that just somebody's playing with it? It's just doing that on its own. Are you sure that it's actually pushed properly?
Yes, because there's no ground.
Ground. So much ground is here. How much you want? I should deliver some to your house, maybe. You want one pile of ground, I can give. Yes? You want a pile or a bucket? You don't know. Okay, we'll send a pile then.
Is a torchlight for reading.
Good. Ooh, nice. Inherent in this attitude of Srila Prabhupada's and Srila Rupa Goswami's was a strong conviction about the purifying force of the holy name. If engaged in chanting Hare Krishna, even the most fallen person could gradually become a saintly devotee. Srila Prabhupada would often quote a verse from Srimad Bhagavatam affirming that persons addicted to sinful acts could be purified by taking shelter of the devotees of the Lord. He knew that every hate Ashbury hippie was eligible to receive the mercy of the holy name, and he saw it as his duty to his spiritual master to distribute the gift of Krishna consciousness freely. Rejecting no one, yet while living among these mlechas, he required a certain standard of behavior, and he was adamant about preserving the purity of his Krishna conscious society. Right? Means they didn't follow all the rules and regulations, but it didn't mean that they weren't pure. Right? In other words, you have the standards of purity. Then how expert you are at, you know, your dressing or other aspects of, you know, how you're doing the cleanliness or these different things like this, those can be introduced, right? Purity is a concept, right? So it's a matter of understanding what you're touching, what you're not touching, what's clean, what's not clean. You know what I'm saying? Then cleanliness, then you can learn that technique, you know, how to find, you know, dirt everywhere. Like, if you want to know if someone really knows how to clean, then when you go into a room, of course, if you go in and it looks nice, then, you know, you can start thinking that they know. If you go in and it doesn't look nice, it's obvious. But let's say you go in and just by first glance it looks clean. Now, if you really want to know if they know what cleanliness is, then go up to the light switches. Right? And when the light switch is pushed on the bottom, check the top if it's dirty, or along the top of the edge of the light switch board, or in the door, you know, you have the main door, and then in the frame you have all those little ledges. Check those. Or the ledge, you know, just above where the floor comes up, we call it the datu, like that. You know, is there dirt there? You know, ledges of the windows, in the corners. You understand? Then you can tell they know how to clean. If not, then they just kind of got the floor, you know. I remember once the GBC was coming and all that, and at that time then they used to, some would stay in the Lotus building because there wasn't Conch building, and many would stay in the Long building, like in the top floor, down to the last, you know, the end, the last two sections. So then I was supposed to get the bathroom clean and see the rooms were all cleaned and all that. So I went and really scrubbed the bathroom clean, you know, toilets are nice and shiny, everything like that. And then in the afternoon, after the GBC had come and all that, they're there, and then Bhavananda was sitting in the park. I think at that time it was Jagadish. They were sitting on the bench in Prabhupada's park, and I was on the on the in the second floor veranda checking things and stuff. So then I think Bhavananda Swami or something like that, and then he says Jagadish says that the bathrooms aren't clean. I said, come on, yeah, they're very clean. I write a screen, scrub, this, that. Says, no, you go check, you'll see it's not clean. So I went in, looked everywhere, looked in all the toilets, looked in all the showers, the sinks, you know, every place. It was clean. So I went back and says, no, I just checked, it's all nice and clean. And then the both of them just looked at me and said, did you ever look up? Up? So I went back in the bathroom and looked up, and the ceiling was just covered in cobwebs and all kinds of stuff like that. I'd never thought, you know, just what's down here is what was had to be cleaned. So that makes sense. So you can learn the technique. Does that make sense? So Prabhupada, the standards of you know, his principles, his four regular principles, the chanting of 16 rounds, if that's in place, one will be pure. Right. Then from there, then they can learn more technique, how to do an artik or worship the deity, how to cook, how to dress properly, how to do kirtan, play kartals, mridanga, you know, all these different things, how to chant nicely, different songs, even different tunes. They had one tune, right? That was the whole thing. There was a whole like a cataclysmic, kind of debate about, you know, Prabhupada's tune, and then Allen Ginsberg had a different tune. You know, it's just like, you know, that's the end of the world. You know, it's like, we can't use that. You know, you won't go back to Godhead if you chant that tune. You know, it's all about the tune, you know. So, you know, stuff like that. Then they can kind of learn with time a few more tunes. So, you know, like that. In other words, the point is to be absorbed in chanting, not the tune. Does that make sense? Yes? No?
Yes.
Like that. In other words, You know some music, you can sing some nice tunes, great. But the point is it has to be, the focus has to be on the holy name, on that chanting, on the devotion. Right? If not, stick to a simple tune. Right? And if you just know simple tunes, that's fine. But it's the, what's the important thing?
Chanting.
Okay. And then within the chanting?
Meditation,
not taste.
Also,
taste for the holy name. Okay. Yes, is then that devotion. Does that make sense? That's the whole point. Not show everyone what a nice tune you sing, or, you know, everybody should be impressed by that, or, you know, your fancy mridanga beats or fancy kartals, you know, riffs and stuff like that. No. Yes? No? What do you think? Yes? You think? For example, if you're going to distribute free food to the public, it could not be ordinary food, but must be prasadam, food offered to Krishna. Feeding hungry people was futile unless they were given prasadam and the chance of liberation from birth and death. And although in the kirtans, sometimes I think, well, I hear occasionally Jayadvaita Maharaj makes comments on this, because they would distribute prasadam, and who would be distributing it?
Devotees.
So people would know this is something different. Devotees would talk about it. This is prasadam. So if you know it's prasad and you take prasad, then it's devotional service. You understand? Because you know it's spiritual food. You're eating it. So you know it's connected to God. So then it's devotional. If you're taking prasadam but you don't know it's spiritual, then it's called a jnata sukriti. Means unknown pious activity. So it's bhakti jnata sukriti, but it's still a jnata sukriti. Right? And so the person doesn't know. So they get benefit, but that element of devotion is not there. That element of devotion is not there. Does that make sense? Like that. And then if you hide it, that it's just welfare work, right? Then they're still getting that, but then the devotees who are distributing it don't really get much benefit. Does that make sense?
Yes.
Right? So one has to be very, very careful about these things. We don't distribute food because only that is welfare work. Distributing the holy name is the highest welfare work. right? Distributing the philosophy of Krishna consciousness, that's the highest welfare work. Right? That's the param upakara. Then, this is part of it. So, people are going to eat, you distribute prasadam. Right? But it's not that, oh, everybody else is distributing food or clothes or this or that, we should do that, then people will think good about us and all that. What is this thinking good about us? Right? Because it will change with their opinion. You know? It'll change with their opinion. They understand the aspect of the prasad, then they like, they don't like, that's another thing. You know, in other words, you distribute what you can do. Right? You don't do more. Does that make sense?
Yes.
You know, welfare NGOs, they'll do food, they'll do medicine, they'll do clothes, they'll maybe do shelter. You know, one does mosquito nets, you know, because of malaria. You know, they do different things. But they don't try to give God consciousness. Right? So people are already doing that stuff, but no one's giving God consciousness. So that's what we can do, right? That's what we have. Right? Does that make sense? We have that, so that's what you give. Right? Let us say after lunch, you have some rice left over. Okay? And somebody needs to eat. What do you give them?
Rice.
Okay, let's say instead of rice, you have some sabji left over. What do you give?
Sabji.
Said subject. Okay. So that means if we have God consciousness, right? So what do we give?
God consciousness.
Does that make sense? That's the whole point. So that's and of welfare work. That's the highest. And although in the kirtans he allowed openness and free expression and welcomed the wildest participation, the transcendental sound of the holy name had to dominate. Right? It couldn't be that the instruments are too much or people... Yes?
If the devotee is distributing prasadam, and there's
uh-huh. No, then it's they know what they're what is, because agyata means unknown. You don't know what it is. Just like you don't know what the Rath Yatra is and this and that. You just happen to be walking down the street picking up your dry cleaning, right? And the devotees go by with the kirtan and you see Jagannath and like that. So they see that, they see Jagannath, they hear the transcendental sound, you know, they maybe even get hit in the head with a banana, right, or something, you know. So then that's agyata sukriti, because he doesn't know what this is. He doesn't know this is devotional service, that, you know, the guy on the cart with the big huge eyes is the Lord, you know, like this. He doesn't know this is the holy name. He just knows that, you know, these guys are chanting, the guys in their bed sheets are chanting something. He doesn't know what it is, right? Does that make sense? So that's agyata. Agyata simply means unknown. That's why if it's known, it's prasadam, then it's not agyata sukriti. They know it's prasadam. Now, of course, someone may then react, you know, because it's a natural thing, is that you, in an argument, you can't get bewildered by this, or at least try not to be. Is that in a discussion, if there's a difference of opinion, whatever point you make, then it will apply to, you know, most all areas, but there'll always be some area that doesn't match, right? Because it's a material world. Nothing is perfect here. So everything has something that doesn't match, that's contradictory. You know, like that? You know, it's like, you know, you're supposed to brush your teeth, right? But you can't brush them at noontime, right? Because of the sun, it has a bad effect on the teeth. So there's always going to be these things. But the morning and evening, you're brushing your teeth according to the sun, right? In the sun, early morning, and the evening, you know, when you take your morning, evening bath, the bath is according to connected with the sun. Does that make sense? So therefore, you're brushing your teeth then. But at noontime, you also take a bath, but you don't brush your teeth. Clean your tongue, but you can't brush your teeth. Okay? Does that make sense? Doesn't make sense.
makes sense, but I just don't know the reason.
The reason is somehow or another the sun has a bad influence at that time. So one's not supposed to brush the teeth. Cause some weakness or some other thing. So in an argument, you'll make a presentation, and then the person will find what, you know, if they're intelligent, or even sometimes if they're not, they'll find a contradiction somewhere. They'll completely ignore the 99.9% times that it applies, and they'll find that 1.10%, percent that doesn't. Right? And so finding that, then they think, yes, I've defeated you. You know, and see, what about this? So then they'll say, oh, what about people if they know it's Prashad, won't take it? That's not actually that many people, right? Because the point is, you know, either they're appreciating that's a spiritual program and that, and they've come to it because it's spiritual, so they're going to eat the food, right? And if people, if you're distributing because people are needy and hungry, they're hungry. They'll generally eat anything. So it's very rare you ever find a problem like that, right? So then, they may say that, well, what if that's there? Okay, but you are willing to explain it. You're not presenting it that it's just some mundane welfare work and see how nice we are, we're giving in charity. Right? That's not the basis. The basis is that we're a spiritual movement, we distribute spiritual food. Right? Does that make sense? So the idea then is that you're willing to explain. They don't accept. Then you do, like that. Then they take the food, and then with a while they'll become purified. And then from being purified, then they'll take up. Like I've heard stories, a couple of stories. Devotees, they had a friend who liked to come to the temple, so they would go with them. They didn't like the devotees. They didn't like the philosophy. Didn't like nothing, but they'd eat the food. Right? And they didn't want to hear anything. So they wouldn't hear any philosophy, wouldn't take part in the kirtan and anything like this. But every week they go to the Sunday feast. Like that. Right? And you're completely just not interested at all. And one case, after 9 weeks, then they shaved up and moved into the temple. I think the other one that I heard of was like 6 weeks. So therefore, you're distributing prasad regularly and this and that. They don't. But after a while, they're going to get purified. Then you're going to be able to say something. There's ideas you can never say anything and this and that. People all around the world make it very obvious their religious intentions. Right? You know, it means you can say, well, nowadays people don't. I mean, you have fighting going on in Israel and the surrounding countries because of their religion. Right? You go to most places in the world, there's consideration about religion. People don't have a problem with it. You know, that is one of your reasons you do something. Right? Does that make sense? Yes? No?
Yes.
So it's very much part of people's lives. You know, a few people in the cities, and you know, they'll present that it's not so important. Because they have other religious, you know, inclinations, you know. Generally, it's called materialism. That's their philosophy. Yes? No? What does Madhava have to say? Have to find?
Pay attention.
Have to pay attention, yes. Okay. And how much do you have to pay for this attention these days? What's the going price? You don't know. Oh, so now, how will you pay attention if you don't even know what price you have to pay? So who are you going to ask? Kishore. You'll ask Kishore. Okay. Keshava. Okay. Well, he knows prices and all that. So. He's down on the street. He knows the going price and going rate. And stuff like that. Yeah? Back in the ashram, hey, I got some good paying attention here for cheap.
What about? That'll cost you. What are they doing now? Marbles are going now. Good rocks for juggling, not even punch booty rocks.
Juggling is in now.
Oh, okay. Yeah, no, it's a good thing to learn juggling, right? Because, see, is that it's something you're going to use later in life, see? Because you're going to have to juggle. You're going to have to juggle between your devotional service, you know, I mean, your sadhana, your devotional service, and your family, right? So that's a lot of juggling. You know, you got to get it all right. Too much this way, then you get, you know, get weak and all that, then the family gets annoyed because there's no potency. Not enough time with the family to get annoyed because, you know, there's no interaction. So that juggling is really, really, so it's a good thing. It's juggling.
So they can get job in the circus?
You can get job in the circus, yes. Yes, you can do that also. You know, you get a cute nose also. You know, interesting hairdo. You know. I actually think some of these guys are from the circus. You know, they present themselves that they're little kids, but I think they're midgets, you know. They're actually 40, 50 years old, but they just figured out it's an easy life. You know, you come by, pretend you're a kid and everything. So you notice they never get any older, right? You know, they've been here many years, they're still the same, right? So, like that. Yeah? I'm just trying to figure out if they don't grow hair on their face or they wax it. You know? That makes sense. Or? Huh? Yeah? You notice bees. Because you're wondering what waxing is. See, bees have no hair on their body. Have you ever noticed there's no hair? Have you ever seen a hairy bee? Right? All they do is that's what they do is waxing. That's their job. Right? They're professionals at waxing. Right? So that's what you see. None of them have any hair. Yeah? Makes sense. Yeah. See that. The transcendental sound of the holy name had to dominate. He never allowed the kirtan to degenerate into mere beating on drums or chanting of any old words. Nor could anyone in the group become so crazy that others wouldn't be able to hear or take part in congregational chanting. You know, so they couldn't get so wild that they'd bother others or so loud that no one else could take part in distracting. You know, it couldn't be about them and just what they're into, you know, just beat the drum, you know, you like the sound, or, you know, stuff like that. They had to be part of the whole process. Right? In his attempts to, quote, somehow or other, end quote, get these young people chanting Hare Krishna, because that was what Rupa Goswami said, somehow or another. Prabhupada instinctively knew what to allow and what not to allow. He was the master, and his new disciples followed him when he permitted an egoistic, sensual dancer to jump around the temple or a drugged madman to argue with him in a question-and-answer period. When a person was too disruptive, Prabhupada was not afraid to stop him, but stopping was rare. The main thing was giving, right? So the point was, is, you know, you weren't looking, Prabhupada wasn't looking for, okay, what's too much? He was looking for what was good, right? He was supporting. And so that's what made everyone attracted. That's the main thing. But at the same time, he had standards, right? This is what broad-mindedness means. He has standards, and he's willing to establish them as he can and as are needed, right? But at the same time, he's accommodating that these people who can't follow the standard, they're accommodated. It doesn't mean that they're accommodated and they stay like that. It means whatever their position, they start from there, and then slowly, slowly, they understand why you do things the way you do things. Getting good.
worship, and it gets them paying attention really soon, right? Because otherwise you're always busy doing something else, either blabbering or sleeping. I mean, I know they're both very engaging activities, but still, at this point, you know, I'm doing the blabbing, right? So when I finish blabbing, though, from 10 to 7 to 7 o'clock, then you can do all the blabbing you want, you know. And I'll tell you a secret. The faster you talk, the more you can get in, you know, like that. It's also interesting. It keeps others entertained because your voice gets high and squeaky also. So, you know, like that. But, of course, if you let it get too high and squeaky, no one can understand what you're saying. Of course, you have the satisfaction of maximum amount of blab. But at the same time, if you want interaction from others and like that, then you got to keep the, you know what I'm saying? Because it gets too high, only dogs can hear it, you know, like that. Like that. So, you know, you got to keep it down and what it is like that. You know, if you get too low, then also then it creates a problem. Because you might knock somebody off the bridge or something. Because of the lowness of the vibration and all that, too. So you got to keep it in between. Yeah? But if I was you, I'd work it out quick, get some of that a good old pay attention. Okay. The kirtan lasted more than an hour as the chanters joined hands and danced around the room and incense poured out the front door. As people walk by, all of us, all this smoke billowing out, people dancing, chanting. Very exotic. You could say. People wouldn't know what it is. Prabhupada wasn't worried about that. That exotic would be attractive. That's what people are always looking for, difference. What's the whole point of fashion? Difference. To be unique, different. So it's not a problem that difference is a problem. Right? Everyone's looking for difference. So definitely we have different. Most people say that, oh, well, it's very old or retro, but you have to realize retro is in. That's one thing. But actually, it's we're so far ahead that people can't make the connection. That's all. The morning and evening kirtans had already made the Radha Krishna temple popular in Haight-Ashbury. But when the devotees began serving a daily free lunch, the temple became an integral part of the community. Right? Daily free lunch. Wow. Prabhupada told his disciples simply to cook and distribute prasadam. That would be their only activity during the day. Right? So that was his service. In the morning they would cook, and at noon they would feed everyone who came, sometimes 150 to 200 hippies from the streets of Haight-Ashbury. Why is it Haight-Ashbury? Yes, Haight-Ashbury. That's like the center of the whole thing, so called Haight-Ashbury. Before the morning kirtan, the girls would put oatmeal on the stove, and by breakfast there would be a room full of hippies, most of whom had been up all night. The cereal and fruit was for some the first solid food in days. But the main program was the lunch, right? Because, you know, either only those who had been up all night would be there for the the breakfast, right? Otherwise, the others would have gone to bed late and would still be sleeping, so they didn't have to worry that too many would come to breakfast, because only his devotees were up, right? You know, so some would come. But the main program was lunch. You know, everybody could be up by lunch. You know, it's not too hard. Malati would go out and shop, getting donations whenever possible for whole wheat flour, garbanzo flour. What's garbanzo flour? Chickpea flour, basin. Yeah. Split peas, rice, and whatever vegetables were cheap or free. Potatoes, carrots, turnips, rutabagas. Rutabagas. Like that. I don't think you want to know. Beets. Then every day the cooks would prepare spiced mashed potatoes, buttered chapatis, split pea dal, and a vegetable dish for 200 people. Wow. Chapatis for 200 people. That's a lot of people. And these are very hungry hippies. These aren't just, you know, come in dainty, oh yes, very nice, one chapati and then leave. These are guys that probably they eat till it runs out, you know, kind of. You know. The lunch program was possible because many merchants were willing to donate to the recognized cause of feeding hippies. Because it was a, you know, modern thing, new thing, you know, people thought was really, you know, nice, the hippies. They thought it was something special. So then at this time, it was something considered a little more glorious. Later on, it degraded more just into a drug culture and music culture. But at that time, it was more philosophy and all that. So then many of the merchants would donate. Especially you have vegetables that are still okay, but they don't look good enough. So generally, most all these big supermarkets and chains, they have a certain standard that it can only be there for this many hours. And then after that, even though it's still perfectly good, they can't keep it on the floor. So many, many times the devotees, they go, they take a truck, right? You need a truck. And go there, and you can just take the stuff away for free. Like that. Because otherwise, they're going to throw it out. They can't use it. They can't sell it. So they can get. So like that, then the devotees could get things from them. Or they would actually be donating, you know, things and stuff like that. Harsharani. The lunch program attracted a lot of the hippie hill crowd, who obviously wanted food. They were really hungry. And there were other people who would come also. People who were working with the temple but weren't initiated. The record player would be playing the Swamiji's record. It was a nice family atmosphere. Right, so prasadam, and then there'd be Prabhupada's kirtan going on in the back. Haridas. It was taken outside too, outside the front. But the maid food was served inside. It was amazing. The people would just all huddle together, and we would really line them wall to wall. A lot of them would simply eat and leave. Other stores along Haight-Ashbury were selling everything from beads to rock records. But our store was different because we weren't selling anything. We were giving it away. And we were welcoming everybody. We were providing a kind of refuge from the tumult and madness of the scene. What's a tumult? You take some parchment paper and you a very long piece of parchment paper, and then you write on it in Hebrew. Then you take two fancy sticks, put it at the two ends, and roll it up so it meets in the middle, and then put a nice cloth over it and stick it on the altar. Is that a tumult? You don't know. Anyone? No, that's a Talmud. Like that. But, okay, so what's a Talmud? No? You come on. You're a master at Talmuds. You? No? You? No? You? You're also another master. Maybe it's a fruit. I see. So you're a master in some fruit? The banana dough. Right? You know, the way you take the peel off and then you distraction, throw it in their face and then squish the banana in their eyes. So they can't see. Like that. And then you take a banana leaf and then you tie them up. No? Okay. What about you? You're also one of the masters. No? So what's going on? The masters don't know how to explain it. It's so esoteric. They just can't explain the fine points of tumultness. No? Tumult means basically a, you know, bit of a riot. It's not on such a large scale, but it's a, you know, something is tumultuous. You know, well, it can be, actually. When they played all the drums and blew the conches, that Kurukshetra, Tumalo, you know, that shloka, that was very tumultuous, very loud, very big, very like that. Now you know what I'm talking about? The experts here. You know, you guys get together and start a riot, you know? Like that. Yes? So that's Talmud. We are providing a kind of refuge from the tumult and madness of the scene. But it was, in that sense, a hospital. And I think a lot of people were helped and maybe even saved. I don't mean only their souls. I mean their minds and bodies were saved. Because what was going on in the streets, that they just simply couldn't handle. I'm talking about overdoses of drugs. People were plain lost and needed comforting, and who sort of wandered or staggered into the temple. I don't know, you ever heard of Boy George, right? He's a very, you know, quite a big, I don't know if he still is, but very famous singer. I'm not sure what kind of music he plays, but he always wears a funny hat. But so he had mentioned that, because he did this big program in Russia with the devotees, I mean, huge amount of people, I forget how many people, 30,000, some very big amount of people. And he was happy to do it because at one point, even though I think he's from America, it was in Australia, in Sydney, and he was just, somehow or another, everything had gone funny for him, and he was just living on the street. So he had nothing. But there, right down in the main scene, you know, in other words, the Haight-Ashbury scene of Sydney, it's called King's Cross, we have a temple there, and they used to distribute prasad. So he would come there, and for 2 weeks he was eating there every day. And like this devotee Haridas is saying, he actually said it saved his life, you know, like that. And so he was very, so you never know who's going to stagger in off the street, you know. Some of them stayed and became devotees, and some just took prasadam and left. Daily we had unusual incidents. And Swamiji witnessed it and took part in it. The lunch program was his idea. Mukunda. The Salvation Army came in one day for lunch. They just unloaded a whole truckload of people on us. About 30 or 40. Because they were distributing food. They do clothes. They don't do food. The Salvation Army does clothes. You know. So then they had all kinds of hungry. So they just came and brought a truck. Larry Shippen. Some of the community of loose people cynically took advantage of the free food. They didn't appreciate the Swami because they said he was, in his own way, an orthodox minister, and they were much more interested in being unorthodox. It was a fairly cynical thing. Right? So he's saying some people took advantage. But the point is even they're taking advantage as prasad, they'll get benefit. Right? Those that don't will get more benefit. Those who are more interested and had questions, the spiritual seekers, would visit Swamiji in his room. Many of them would come in complete anxiety over the war in Vietnam or whatever was going on. Trouble with the law, bad experiences on drugs, a falling out with school or family. There was much public concern about the huge influx of youth into San Francisco, a situation that was creating an almost uncontrollable social problem. Police and social welfare workers were worried about health problems and poor living conditions, especially in Haight-Ashbury. Some middle-class people feared a complete hippie takeover. The local authorities welcomed the service offered by Swami Bhaktivedanta's temple. And when civic leaders in Haight-Ashbury talked of forming a council to deal with the crisis, they requested Swami Bhaktivedanta to take part. He agreed, but lost interest after the first meeting. No one seemed seriously interested in hearing his solution, right? Because he had a solution, but they have all their own ideas of how things should work. So Prabhupada, therefore. So, well, so you can see is that people will note, if we do what we do, on a grand scale, then people will notice. You know, it's when we try to do what they do, that is the problem. If we do what we do, then what will be the problem? Yes? Any problem? No problem. Are you making a problem? No. are you the problem? You don't know. So that means there's a possibility that you are the problem. No, no possibility. Okay, so then that means what? He's the problem? No, he's not the problem. He's bigger than you. Okay, is he the problem? No. Okay. So you'll think about it and then let us know what's the real problem. Yes? See, basically we have two problems. One, the tumultuousness, right? Like that. And he still has to figure out how to buy some, got to pay attention. Okay? So these are the two main problems you got to think about and give us a solution later, okay? Yeah? Okay, great.
Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Jai Srila Prabhupada ki, Samaveta Bhaktivrinda ki, Jai Nitai Gaura Premanandi.